Is retirement even a possibility anymore? Some millionaires are saying, nope. We're going to talk about it coming up on the show next.
From the streets of San Antonio, straight to your wallet, it's Jake's 2 cents on Jake of All Trades.
All right, welcome back. My name is Kirk, and I'm not a financial expert.
But I'm Jake. I am the financial expert. And together, Kirk and I talk about financial planning, we talk about the economy, and we review financial articles, all with the express purpose of helping our listeners build wealth, both today and into the future.
And we're going to talk about the future of millionaires. We're going to talk about millionaires and this interesting study that was done. I mean, millionaires are an interesting group in general. I'm not one of them. But it's like, what was the number it said? It said something like there are, how many millions of millionaires? 24.5 millionaires nationwide. 24.5 million millionaires.
Millionaires.
That's a lot of millionaires.
A lot of millionaires.
And now the way they seem to be categorizing a millionaire is someone with $1 million in cash or some kind of cash reserve. Yeah. Like not, so it's not, so there are, I think there are probably even more people if you were to include all their assets.
Correct.
Like houses, right? So someone their someone who might have a $800,000 house, and then they have a, you know, a couple hundred thousand here and there, they are a millionaire in a certain sense. But I think this is talking about people who have
like $1 million, you know, six, bucks or more stashed away.
Yeah.
Accessible.
Liquid,
ready to pay for. Yeah, liquid.
Yeah, liquid. Exactly. This is liquid millionaires, is my assumption that they're talking about. And then, so, of course, I mean, they have stuff on top of that. They have assets, I would imagine, most of these people.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think, if you included that, that would be, I mean, I think 24.5 million millionaires just with money in the bank is a lot. So including other assets, that's a good chunk of people.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. And so what they're discovering in this study is that many millionaires, so if, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't millionaires, do not feel confident about their financial standing in regards to retiring.
Yeah.
So why don't you explain like the math behind what they're talking about in this, particularly in this group, there's a math they were thinking about with this 4% rule. How much do you need? Like, what are they talking about?
Yeah. So traditional retirement planning centers around the idea that I've worked to accumulate all of this liquid money. And then when I stop working, I switch from accumulation to distribution of that money. And the distribution or the pace with which we're distributing that money needs to be at a level that can withstand 30 plus years of no longer working, right? And so the old formula that's still around today and still applies in some instances is the 4% rule, which basically says if I have a certain number of money, dollars in my savings for retirement, I shouldn't withdraw more than 4% of that amount of money to live on every year. So if you think about at $1 million, that's like 40 grand a year. Now, it's important to distinguish between that 40 grand from your investments versus the extra that you might get from Social Security, right? So Social Security is another form of retirement income that's based on your wages that you've been paying into. This is to supplement that. So part of that 4% rule is that it's not always designed to cover all of your living expenses. That's the first thing that people need to remember. So at first glance, and what this article is talking about is like, because of crazy amounts of inflation and the fact that we didn't have a good financial market performance year last year, portfolios were negative for the first time since 2008, $40,000 a year doesn't cut it. It doesn't really seem like that's going to pay the bills in retirement. And so that's kind of the logic behind where these millionaires are feeling like they're coming up short.
Well, I think also, so even if you add the things you're talking about, I mean, what are you talking about? 50, 60, 70,000 type stuff or something.
For and like if, that target income level or.
Well, like, so on top of the 4% rule, right? So you're talking about 40,000, let's say you have $1 million in cash. cash, mm-hmm. and you're talking about distribution now for your retirement, and you're doing 4% a year, you have, that's $40,000 for that, but you were saying that there's also Social Security and things like that, right?
Right.
So even with that stuff, you're still only talking $60,000-$70,000 a year, right?
Correct.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which if you're a millionaire up to this point, you probably have been living off more than that. More than likely. And that, I think even that is still insufficient. I mean, your mortgage might be something like $50,000 or something or more. Just on even now, maybe you don't have a mortgage anymore, which is ideal, but you could see where they could feel the stress in their 40s and 50s of like looking at that number and just saying like, well, but numbers are going to go up even more. So is my $1 million going to have to be 2 or 3 or 4 million for retirement? Yeah. Like, is that my goal that I'm going to be trying to reach by the time I get there? Like, that's a legitimate thing to consider. And so there's something that needs to be thought about in regards to people's money and their relationship to money and how they should be considering their retirement rather than I need to have this big lump sum. I need to have 4%. I mean, distribution.
That's a great way to think about it. Yeah.
Now, the question I have for you, though, about this is so one of the things this article brings up is that a lot of rule of thumbs we've been using are outdated. One of the CFPs says, one of the financial planners, Goodsell, in this article, a lot of the rules of thumb we've been using are outdated. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I think so. Especially as it relates to this 4% rule, I think is outdated. And it runs the risk of creating the emphasis on accumulating a nest egg rather than creating income for retirement. Right. And we've done shows on this before where it's like when you're just focused exclusively on accumulating a nest egg, you neglect the fact that other variables will work away at that nest egg, things like inflation, healthcare costs, etc. So I think the 4% rule is a little misleading. I also think it's a little misleading because in this environment where we've had interest rates artificially lowered really since 2008, the 4% rule came into effect in the 80s when, you know, a savings account would yield you like 10% and you could buy a CD for 15% interest, right? Yeah. In that environment, it's very easy for you to sort of guarantee that my nest egg is going to grow at a rate that's sustainable for me to pull 4%. And now, as we're starting to see, the markets are a lot more tumultuous. Interest rates, while they have crept up this year, they're still not going to be where they were back in the 80s. And certainly we can't rely on them being near zero anymore. And so there's a lot, it's a completely different environment. And so that's why I think that some rules of thumb are outdated because the landscape has changed.
Yeah, I mean, we've always talked about on this show lots of different creative thinking that needs to go into each individual person's plan and their retirement and their life regarding their money and finances. And the question is, so part of the thinking behind creating something like a 4% rule is that you don't have to think creatively. Like you could just... you could use your creative thinking for other things. Like the whole point is like, okay, I don't want to think about this part of my life. Yeah. I just want to have a specific rule. Just what do I do? And then I just do it and I'm done. Right. And that's the whole concept behind it, I think, versus like now you have to use these, your thinking, you have to really, you know, kind of
that's a good point.
Work through what has to. So what seems needs to be done to help a lot of these people is come up with similar rules to at least be guidelines for them. Because I think that's what the 4% rule is supposed to be. It's just a guideline. And hopefully, at a bare minimum, that will be sufficient if you know, all else goes well. And now maybe that number just has to change. Maybe it needs to be a 6% rule or something like that. I don't know. Or maybe it needs to be like a 3, you know, I don't know, like a 3 revenue rule where like in retirement, you need to think about you need to have three revenue streams, at least your 401k or your 401k, your social security, or maybe 4 or 5. I don't know the five, whatever the number, you know, and then you need to have an extra side hustle revenue. Or maybe there's an optional one. So there's four. Here are your four main. I don't know. I'm just coming up with this off the top of my head. But yeah, you know, so you have this, and then a fifth one that's like a creative, out of the box, get a roommate, start a side hustle, try something else, you know, get some, you know, use your services online to make money, something. That
so I think you're right. Changing the rule is important. And I would almost say another way to think about it too is change the rule from things that you can't control to things that you can control. And what I mean by that is we can't really control the performance of our investments, right? We can do our best based on exposure, but as we've talked about before, the markets are going to do what they're going to do. And the 4% rule sort of puts the emphasis on factors that I have no control over. So rather than do that, what if we focus on, okay, the rule should be controlling expenses in retirement. So making sure that if I have a mortgage, it's not more than 30% of my Social Security benefit. Or if it is, maybe the old thought process of not having debt in retirement actually doesn't make sense because I could refinance my mortgage when I'm 65 and dramatically lower my mortgage payment by extending the maturity of that mortgage. That's going to help me meet my rule of like, okay, now my housing costs are way lower and they fit within what my income streams are. So you can kind of take a different perspective to say, okay, I'm not going to rely exclusively on living within a percentage withdrawal off savings. I'm going to focus more on controlling expenses that I know won't exceed certain expectations of what my income will be.
Yeah. So what's the rule? How would you sum up the rule for that?
I think the rule would be what are those dollars of a budget that I need to make sure my living expenses are falling within, right? So if I've prior to retirement, I was living on $100,000 a year, for example, and I had a budget that fit in that $100,000. Now into retirement, I need to focus on, okay, what are the variables of my budget that have to remain? Housing costs, food, the things that I've got to pay for, utilities, and then making sure that those numbers represent maybe 80% of what they previously did before I retired, right? Because we know that we're going to have to live on slightly less in retirement unless we've saved a whole bunch or we have a really high income that's coming through in retirement. So if we got to live on less, the first thing to do is not to look at how much is my income going to be. It's going to be how can I reduce expenses first, and then my income will cover that.
Okay. So I'm trying to think about how we would sum that up in a rule that's equivalent to the 4% rule. Mm-hmm. So again, the thing that's nice about the 4% rule for especially someone who's, you know, financially ignorant or they don't think about money or they don't want to think about it that much, or they're mostly nervous about it versus confident and knowledgeable. And maybe, maybe they are a high income earner. They just don't think about money that carefully or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they grew up poor and psychologically they have problems with money. Right. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, the 4% rule is this very specific, concrete, easy goal, not easy in terms of achievable, but in terms of thinking about what I have to do. I have to make sure that, you know, so I need, if I want $60,000 a year, then I need to have, you know, 1.8 million saved up because of the 4% rule for distribution. Like that, that level of simplicity and concretization. Does that make sense?
Yep, totally.
So I'm trying to think about like what could be an equivalent.
So maybe it's
something
like,
similar.
Maybe it's like I need 60% of my current monthly budget. I need to be able to live on 60% of my current monthly budget.
So if your monthly budget is like $4,500 a month,
mm-hmm. then
that's how much you're spending. That's your budget right now.
That's your budget.
Which is low, that covers, I think, for a millionaire. But
that's probably a little low. So let's say it's 10,000, just so we have even numbers to work with. So let's say you're living on $10,000 a month before you retire, and that covers your housing, your utilities, your groceries, your extracurriculars, your everything. Now, when I visualize retirement, let's operate in the way that the Social Security system was designed to do, which is provide 60% of your pre-retirement working income, right? So now go through an exercise of your budget to say, okay, what of my fixed expenses can I fit into 60%? And then my variable expenses, things like going out, travel, et cetera, now I know that those I have to control. And in some years where maybe the market does well, I get to expand that portion of the budget a little bit. But in some years where it doesn't, I need to contract that. But at least I know that that 60% rule of expenses is always going to be covered.
Okay. Yeah, so that makes sense. You're basically, instead of thinking about the number that you need to save up to in order to hit your 4% rule, mm-hmm. you're now thinking about what you're currently at.
Expense-wise.
So maybe I'm misunderstanding the 4% rule to some degree. So the 4% rule is, my understanding is that it's something you think about now in order to create a goal for the future. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that something you think about later?
No, it's to think about now as a rule of thumb to say, when I'm 65, if I have $1 million, that's going to be 40 grand a year that I can take from my investments. But that doesn't materialize into the actual cost of our expenses. So what I'm suggesting is,
I think I'm getting it.
Yeah. So what I'm suggesting is, now my target is not necessarily accumulation to have a 4% withdrawal. It's accumulation so that 60% of my budget can be covered by Social Security plus some type of a distribution from what I have.
Yeah. So the issue with the 4% is that the 4% rule is that it is assuming things like you talked about earlier, the inflation and investments. But the idea is that if you're able to pulling out 4% of a certain amount means that you could do that for an indefinite amount of time, because with investments growing, you'll still be able to pull that out. And with $1 million, you'll still be growing that leftover. Correct. So you can kind of cycle that in for 10, 20 years maybe, right? Because that's the other issue is like how long you're going to live.
Exactly.
And so with the 4% rule, like if you pull out more than that, then you're going to be losing equity into that fund or whatever to the point where it's going to run out. But if you do 4%, it won't run out.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's the idea. Because you're like, my portfolio on average over a 30-year time horizon, which would be like retirement, should reasonably be able to generate more than 4% return.
Got it.
So in theory, I should only be pulling my interest and my dividends and not touching my principal.
Yeah.
But this article and the most recent market environment that we experienced in 22 suggests that might not be what works every time, because the markets were negative. So in last year, your portfolio might be down 20%. So if you're living on your $40,000 a year, you technically pulled from principal last year rather than pulled from your earnings on your investments.
Yeah. So I think that's the critical piece that needs to be reimagined a little bit, though, is because what we're talking about is an infinite pool of money to last you till you die.
Right.
Right. So it's like you stop with the income revenue coming in, and then the income that's coming in is essentially the interest being accumulated on the fund that you've developed for your retirement.
Bingo.
And then you need to make sure you have that last long enough. So then the question is, what is the simple rule of thumb to make that system work? Because what you were talking about was thinking about like what you need to live on, not what you need to do to make an infinite amount of money to live on. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about an infinite pool of money, you know, an infinite in the sense of like until you die is what I mean by infinite.
Right. Yeah.
So like it's we need to figure out how to have a rule of thumb for a pool of money that will not die out until you die out.
Right.
And like, you, of course, you don't know when you're going to die out. So you need to have a certain equation for it's going to be self-generating sufficient enough that you can, you know, survive at a good rate. And the 4% rule did that because that's generally over what you would make long term on your investments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so you are correct. I think where my perspective's coming in is like there is never going to be some magic answer to ensure.
But this was the magic answer. That's the thing. This was magic. I think for like 50 years or something.
Yeah. But it's really not. Now I will say, it's sort of interesting. It's been a while since we've had a year where the markets were negative. But this isn't the first year this has happened, right? So there's a concept in behavioral finance that we've talked about before that's called recency bias. And recency bias means that in your mind, you take what has happened most closely to your existence and you extrapolate it as what's going to happen moving forward. And it is not uncommon. And as we can see with like this survey, for example, investors are rattled because their recency bias has taken over. And now, oh my gosh, the economy is a completely different world. The financial markets are going to be super volatile. And now we're never going to see a positive year again in the financial markets. Well, now I've extrapolated what happened last year and made it my normal environment. And that's not always the case, right? So you have to be cautious about that too, because sometimes operating under that thought process might cause you to say, I'm never going to retire. And that's the response we get from a survey like this, right? But what happens if this year the markets return 20%, right? You're way better off than you were last year. And so now are we going to be talking about this in the same context this time next year? Or is it now going to be, oh man, inflation's down and the new rule of thumb is 7%.
Yeah, but if it's 7%, then it'll run out because you're going to go more than interest is the whole problem with it.
But that 4%'s never been guaranteed, is what I'm saying. That 4% has always been based on historical performance, right? And so based on how my portfolio's done historically, I should reasonably expect that 4% moving forward is good. But then last year, it was negative 20. So a negative 20, is that really realistic for me to feel like I could get 4% every year? I'm not sure. Now I feel rattled, and now I don't think that I have the same sort of footing. And so that's where I come back to the decision and the discussion about controlling expenses and making sure that my monthly cost of existence is well within a reasonable amount where I can fluctuate that 4% if I need to. I don't have to always live on 4% withdrawal from my portfolio. So that in years where it's good, those are the years that I can travel a bit more. In years where it's bad, those are the years that I'm relying more heavily on what I get from Social Security.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, that all makes sense. I think everybody listening makes sense. Because what we talk about a lot is the importance of thinking about your, like the way I think about it is think about yourself as a CEO in a sense of your life. Yeah. And you have to really organize your own life and think about it. But I guess what I'm struggling with is the, I'm thinking about the poor man's almanac, Benjamin Franklin's, you know, a penny today is two tomorrow, you know, like very simplistic advice. Yeah. And which I think is really useful for a lot of people, especially people who don't think about finance. Maybe there's no solution. Maybe there is no answer like that, but there is value in that type of thing, right? Sure. Like what, invest today, plant the seeds today for the growth, like those little, and that's to me what I hear when I hear the 4% rule is I see a really simple rule that any like Kirk Doofus can figure out. And I'm good. Like, okay, I know what I got to do. Like, that makes sense. I need to get to, that's what I need to try to achieve.
Right.
And I think ideally you don't do that with your life in general. Mm-hmm. But like, and maybe the reality is that we're just moving beyond that mm-hmm. realm. But I do think that there's a lot of value for broad level financial planning or financial education.
Yeah,
to come up with really simplistic analogies and these kind of examples, and I don't think we've come up with it. Yeah, to be honest, I think it'd be cool if you could come up with it and then start spreading it. Yes. But there's some really valuable advice here that has to do with this type of idea of an infinite pool of money. Like the goal is a regenerating pool of money or mm-hmm. of wealth that mm-hmm. you can sustain the style of life that you want. Those are the two things you need, right? Mm-hmm. So self-generating pool of money that sustains the life that you've always had, something like that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. how do you do that without thinking?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
how do you do that as an automatic, you know, just boom, boom, boom. You don't have to contemplate getting another right. job and like use your creative juices to like, how can I use the knowledge I have to create some side income and do a podcast to teach young kids how to do the job I've done for 40. No, none of that. Right. I mean, you should do that, by the way.
More streamlined. Yeah.
Yeah. But just something that's simple.
As I'm hearing you talk, right, and I completely agree with you that the concept of the 4% rule is extremely valuable from a simplistic perspective.
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe another thing to work into the thought process, especially as like the younger people who majority of them listen to our show and are like, okay, I'm not retired yet, but